See each one this morning, and we're thankful for the ones out in the parking lot as well. And I'd like to this morning to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 14. This should be a very familiar chapter. I believe I've preached about 15 messages from this chapter. It's one of my favorites. It is certainly one of the most eventful and remarkable chapters in the Word of God. It's made up of four main events, and then there are other events that branch off from those, but in each event we see human need, and we see the sufficiency of Christ to meet those needs. The four events are the murder of John the Baptist. We see that in verses 3 through 12. Second event is the feeding of well over 5,000 people, probably about 15,000. We see that in verses 13 through 21. The third event is the apostles in a storm, verses 22 through 33. And the fourth event is Jesus in Gennesaret, healing various individuals. But again, the message of each of these events is Jesus is what people need. And we see that Jesus is the one who knows. He's the one who cares. He's the all-sufficient one. He's the one who can. What we see in each of these events is the supernatural in the natural. And that is our subject this morning. The supernatural in the natural. We will be looking at part of the third of the four events recorded in the chapter, that being the apostles in the storm. We want to consider two main points, the natural event and then the supernatural in the event. So we'll begin reading with verse 22. We'll read through verse 33. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It is a spirit. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. And he said, Come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. We said we'd read through verse 33, but we'll stop right there. Verse 29. What we read here follows one of the most remarkable of Christ's miracles, the feeding of well over 5,000 people with five loaves and two fishes. It's no wonder the songwriter wrote, Little is much when God is in it. And that feeding certainly is evidence of that. Following this miracle, verse 22, Jesus prevails upon the apostles to get into a boat and to cross over the Sea of Galilee. While they were doing that, he would send the multitudes away, that is, the multitudes that had just eaten. So after a supernatural event, Jesus sends his own into the natural. John tells us in his account, John 6, verse 16, and when the evening was now come, his disciples went down into the sea. When the evening was now come, that would be what was known as the first watch between 6 and 9 p.m. So what we read here in verse 22 of our text probably is right around 6 p.m. Verse 23, Jesus sends the multitudes away. And Jesus goes into a mountain to pray. And then we read what transpired from there with the apostles as they're making their way across the Sea of Galilee. Which brings us to the natural event. So again, verse 22, we see the apostles, they get into a boat. The next time we see them is in verse 24. And it says they are in the midst of the sea. So the setting is the Sea of Galilee, also referred to as Lake Gennesaret and the Sea of Tiberias in the Gospels. There's a body of water that is about 13 miles long, 8 miles wide at its widest point, 64 square miles. Maximum depth of about 140 feet. And the ship was in the midst of the sea. A place of vulnerability. The ship was in the midst of the sea. And we read of a powerful, life-threatening storm. Storms were quite common on the Sea of Galilee. They would come very suddenly down from the mountains. But what we see here in this storm is a picture of personal turmoil that you and I could go through. It's also a picture of the world and the times in which we live. Most, if not all, that are here are probably experiencing some type of personal storm. And most certainly because of the times in which we live, it is a time of fierce storm. So the apostles are in the midst of the sea. And there is a fierce, raging storm. And everywhere they look, all they can see is the effects of this storm. So it is today. Everywhere are the effects of the storm of our day and our time. In verse 24, we read of waves, we read of wind. And there they are in the midst of the sea. They're at a point where really there's no turning around. John says in John 6, verse 17, and it was now dark. And Jesus was not come to them. He's up in the mountain praying. So it's a time of darkness. It's a time of loneliness, and they're in the midst of the sea. And we read that their boat was tossed with the waves. The reason for the wind was contrary. So the waves are the consequent results of the wind. So really, the wind is the root problem here. John records in John 6, verse 18, and the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. A great wind. Great, of course, is an adjective describing the noun wind. It speaks of the extent and the force of the wind. It was a very substantial wind. It was a very significant wind. It was large. It was immense. It was enormous. The point is, it's bigger than them. This wind that was blowing, the sea that is rising, is bigger than them and greater than their strength. And from our text in verse 24, we read this wind was contrary. That is, it was opposite, it was adverse, it was moving against them, it was not helping them. Mark says the wind was contrary unto them. These winds were relentless. These winds are an opposing force, and as a result, they are tossed with the waves. So the winds and the waves are battering and hammering them. Their boat is being thrown and hurled about, and they're in a state of great distress. Mark tells us in his account, chapter 6, verse 48, that they were toiling. That is, they were laboring and struggling in rowing. But they're in the midst of the sea. They're in a place of vulnerability. It's dark. The winds are blowing fiercely against them. The waves are rising, battering their boat. They are stuck in this storm. And all seems to be out of control. The waters are very unstable. They're unsettled. They're agitated. They're violent. They're chaotic. And they're struggling, toiling and rowing. They are struggling to survive and get through this storm. And no matter how much energy they expended, they're not moving beyond this storm. They're in the midst of the sea, struggling against the storm, but making no headway. And again, everywhere they look, are the effects of this opposing storm. So there they are in the midst of the sea. No place to go. The waters are rough. The waves are high. The winds are strong. All around them is fierceness. All around them is threat. The winds and the waves are absolutely brutal. The boards of the boat, we imagine, are creaking. The apostles are soaking wet. I imagine their backs and shoulders are aching from rowing against these waves. And they are at the point of exhaustion. And they're alone in the darkness of the storm. Just holding on. Desperately trying to keep from going under. Verse 23. Again, we saw that it was the first watch when they got in the boat. By the time you get to verse 25, it's the fourth watch. That is, it's now between 3 and 6 a.m. They've been out there a while. Again, all of this serves as a picture of some of the personal and individual storms that you and I have, a picture of the adversities and the burdens and the stresses and the setbacks, the afflictions and the battles and the obstacles that we experience from time to time. It can be a picture of the inward storms of life. Many times you look at an individual and you think, wow, everything's going well for them. But you don't know that. They may have an inward storm. There may be waves and winds that are gripping their hearts. And what we read here is also a picture of the times in which we live. We live in a time of storm. The winds of sin are an opposing force at work. And rising with the winds and battering and hammering us are the waves. The waves of humanism. the waves of evolutional thinking, the waves of secularism and relativism and materialism, and on we can go. We are in a relentless storm. And everywhere are the effects of this opposing and fierce storm. And like the apostles, we may be getting weary. We may be getting tired. It may seem like we're not going anywhere. We're not getting out of this storm. And like the apostles, we are in a very perilous place, in a very urgent time. And like they, we stand in need of the supernatural in the natural. And that brings us to our second point, the supernatural in the natural event. Verse 25, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. This is the supernatural in the natural. From there we see the apostles. Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. From that point on, we see the apostles experiencing the supernatural in the natural. That's what we need today. So there are the apostles, caught in a storm greater than themselves, greater than their physical and mental abilities, greater than their resources. And the wind is blowing fiercely. The mighty waves are threatening their very lives. And with hearts and minds filled with commotion, we read, "And Jesus went unto them." It wasn't in the first watch that Jesus went unto them. It was not during the second watch from 9 to 12 that Jesus went unto them. It was not in the third watch from 12 to 3 in the morning that Jesus went unto them. But we read in the fourth watch, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., sometime in that time frame, Jesus went unto them. When was it that Jesus went unto them? Well, we know it's the fourth watch, but it's when every human prop was gone. All human hope was gone. And Jesus went unto them right on time. It's always right on time. Jesus went unto them. Why didn't he go to them in the first watch? Why didn't he go to them in the second watch? Why didn't he go to them in the third watch? It wasn't time. He went unto them in the fourth watch. Right on time. Right on time. So let's consider how he came. Again, verse 25. Jesus went unto, in the direction of them. That's wonderful. When Jesus moves in our direction. Jesus went unto them. So Jesus is moving in the direction of them. Jesus himself is moving in the direction of them. He's aware of all the details of their circumstances. Again, Mark 6:48, and he saw them toiling and rowing. Remember, he was up in the mountain praying, and he could look down and he could see them toiling and rowing. He saw them in the midst of the waters. He saw the rising waters, and He saw them in the midst of the rising waters. He not only saw the contrary winds, He saw them in the contrary winds. He not only saw their boat being tossed about, He saw them in that boat being tossed about. He saw them in their struggles. He saw the darkness, and He saw them in the darkness, and Jesus went unto them. What a blessing. Jesus went unto them. How did He come? It says that Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. Not in the sea, but on the sea. He's walking on top of the water. He is coming to them in supremacy. He is coming to them in dominion. Those waters which were so easily agitated by the wind were solid ground beneath His feet. Those violent storm-tossed waters that were raging against the apostles are in subjection under His feet. Those very same waters that were tossing the apostles and their ship about, threatening to break their boat in pieces, threatening their very lives, those very same waters which brought all this havoc and all this disruption upon the apostles, these very same waters that would cause destruction in the apostles' life and cause them such fear and turmoil, Jesus walks upon them as if they were dry land. Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. The great wind and those violent waters had no effect upon Jesus. Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. I don't picture Him staggering and fighting the winds. I picture Him just walking calmly. The winds have no effect. The waves have no effect upon Him. And so it is. The natural events of life do not affect who He is. So there He is walking on the sea. The wind and the waters are tossing their boat here and there. But look at Him. Look at Him. He's calm. He's not moved off His path. He's not shaken. He's not bothered by the wind or the waves. And so it is today. He walks majestically and triumphantly upon the storm. By walking on the sea, He's not telling them that the storm was nothing. He's not telling them that the storm was not fierce. He's not telling them that the storm was not powerful, that it was not threatening. But He's telling them and showing them, I am the master of the storm. I'm greater than the storm. And so it is today. He is the master of the storm. And He is greater than the storm. So there's these apostles. They're stuck in this storm much bigger than they. They have no place to turn. And Jesus went unto them. And there He is, in complete dominion of the very thing that was threatening their lives. They thought He was a ghost. And because they misidentified Him, they brought more confusion into their lives. We need to clearly identify Jesus when He's moving toward us. So He comes in supremacy and dominion. But He also came with a message. Verse 27. Jesus, walking toward them on the storm-tossed waters, Jesus spake unto them. Once again, notice, Jesus unto them. Jesus unto them. Jesus spake unto them. So amid the noise of the storm, there was a personal message. Jesus spake unto them. Was not an impractical message, but it was a message that suited their needs and their circumstances. Be of good cheer, he says. That's the message. Be of good cheer. It was a present and direct and personal call by the Lord himself. He's telling them to be something. To be in a certain condition. They are in a life-threatening storm. They're in a state of confusion and anxiety and distress and commotion. And he comes to them. The winds have not ceased. The waves have not gotten smaller. And he says, be of good cheer. You see, the state they were in was not for their spiritual benefit. But what Jesus was telling them would be advantageous and beneficial to them. It would be of great use to them. So he says to these greatly troubled and fearful hearts to be something. Be of good cheer. He's not merely saying be happy. Be joyful. Try that sometimes, somebody that's in a storm and you just go up to them and say, be happy. That's not what he's saying. He's telling them something that would be of great benefit to them. In Matthew 9:22, he says, be of good comfort. The same Greek word, tharseo, is the word translated cheer, comfort, cheer. So what it does is it conveys the idea of tranquility and assurance. So when he says be of good cheer, it is suggestive of a strength of heart, which is the inspiration and the reason for cheerfulness. They see him as the conqueror walking upon the sea. And they hear him as the comforter. Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. It is a message of power. It is I. It is I. An emphatic personal pronoun, the very same as when Jesus says, I am. It is I. What he is saying is, be strong. Be in a state of tranquility and assurance. Be inspired. Why? I am here. I am here. It is I. So from those storm-tossed waters come this voice saying, it is I. It is I, the infinite, omnipotent, all-knowing one. In the midst of all the upheaval and the instability and the uncertainty, come these words, it is I. It is I, the miracle worker. It is I, the conqueror. It is I. And this provides the reason and the motivation and the inspiration to be of good cheer and be not afraid. It is I. So he comes, and he speaks, and he comes with a message. Who's he speaking to? The 12 in that boat. How many respond? One. Peter. How many could have responded? 12. But only Peter responded. Be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. That's a life-changing message. And only Peter answered, Lord, if it be thou, bid or ask or invite me to come unto thee on the water. Not in the water, but on the water. On that storm-tossed, turbulent water. There's a desire for Christ. There's a desire to be where He is. What Peter is saying is this, Lord, I only need to know one thing before I step onto those storm-tossed, turbulent waters. Is that you? That's all I need to know. He didn't say, Lord, if you calm the sea, I'll be willing to come. He said, Lord, all I need to know, are you in it? Is that you? Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto the water. If we're going to truly serve the Lord, we have to stop asking all the questions that do not matter and ask the one that does matter. Lord, is that you? Lord, are you in it? Are you in me leaving this boat and coming to thee on that water? Lord, that's all I need to know. I don't need to know what happens when I step out. All I need to know, Lord, is that you? Are you in this? So when he says, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee. He's not thinking about what's going on in that boat. He's not thinking about the people in the boat. He's not thinking about what's going on side of the boat where Jesus is. He's only thinking of Him. Lord, if it be thou. He's completely focused upon the one who's walking on the water. Bid me come unto thee. Notice me unto thee. You see, what's happened now is Peter has a desire to move beyond the natural and to enter into the supernatural. He has a desire for more. And he's willing to leave that boat. Again, how many heard that message of Christ? 12. How many could have responded, if it be thou, bid me come to thee? 12. But only one responded in that way. If we're going to serve the Lord, we can't be satisfied with the natural. We have to be willing to move beyond the natural. Do we have a desire to move beyond merely struggling and to spiritually survive. I mean, that's what they were doing in that boat. They're struggling to survive. Do we have the desire to move beyond that? Do we have a desire to be where Jesus is? Again, the storm isn't calm where Jesus is. It's raging there also. But if you're going to be in a storm, you might as well be where He is. Are we willing to step out where we are to be where Jesus is? Again, I've preached on this before. I can only imagine Peter stands up in that boat and the other 11, Peter, sit down! You're rocking the boat even more! Sit down, Peter! But he's only concerned about that one out there. That's where his eyes, that's where his focus is. Lord, if it be Thou, bid me to come unto Thee. The Thou and the Thee are the motivating factor of Peter moving. That must be our motivating factor as well. It's also a message of invitation. The Lord said to Peter, come. One word. Four letters. One syllable. Very simple. Come. It is present tense. Come. Hear Jesus say, it is I. Come. What other motivation, what other inspiration do you need to come? It is I. Come. It is a call to leave one thing and advance toward another. Come. Leave the boat and move toward me. It is I. Come. I have everything you need. I am the one who can give you the refreshment, the healing, the hope, the strength, the rest, the relief, the contentment that you need. Come! And it's still so today. Hear Him say, come. Again, keep in mind, the same storm is raging where Christ is telling Peter to come. He says, come. But the difference is Christ is there. It makes a big difference in your storm. The winds are howling, the winds are swirling, the waves are crashing. And Jesus says, come. That is, move closer to me. The Lord's always in that. Move closer to me. It is a call to enter into the supernatural. Next thing we see is Peter enters into the supernatural. Again, the winds are blowing at a gale force against Peter as he stands up in that boat. The waves are crashing against him. But knowing that the Lord would have him to come, he places his foot, that foot of humanity, he places it on the water. Then he places the other foot on the water. And he did not sink. We read in verse 29, and when Peter was come down out of the ship. Where's his eyes? They're upon Christ. Where's his mind? They're upon Christ. Gale force winds blowing against him. Waves crashing against him. And we read, he walked on the water. Read it again and again and again. He walked on the water. He is not frantically splashing in the water. He's not swimming in the water. He walked on the water. He has moved beyond the natural. He has moved beyond the boat, doing what no man can do, walk on water. That's where he is. He's now entered the supernatural. He's moved beyond the natural to doing the impossible. No man can walk on water. But Peter walked on the water. He has moved from the natural to the level of the supernatural. What's he doing? He's doing exactly what Jesus is doing. He's walking on the water. He's doing what only the Lord can do. He has entered the supernatural. And notice, he walked on the water. He had a purpose to go to Jesus. He's getting closer. I don't know how far Peter walked. Maybe he only took 3 or 4 steps. I don't know. He might have walked several hundred yards. We don't know. But he walked on the water. And he did so to go to Jesus. Now we know the rest of the story, and we'll get to that tonight. But we live in the day of fierce storm. The contrary and opposing winds are blowing at a gale force. And the waves of destruction are beating upon us. And most are overcome with confusion and alarm and fear and anxiety and distress. Just trying to survive the storm. But Jesus is in the midst of the storm. And we need to see him moving in our direction. Moving in our direction with supremacy and dominion. And through the noise, and there's a lot of noise today, through the noise of the winds and the waves, listen. And hear him say, be strong. Be in a state of tranquility. Be assured. Be inspired. It is I. That's all we need to know. It is I. And his voice pierces through the noise of the wind and the waves. Again, there's a lot of noise today. Most of it not very good. But piercing through all the noise, it is I. It is I. It is I. Come. Can you hear him? Do you feel a longing to leave that place of survival and thriving to a place of thriving with him? Do you long in this storm to be where he is? Peter's experienced an entirely different level of living than the 11 in the boat. He's walking on the water. Do you long to live on another level? You know, it's one thing to hear about the supernatural and the miraculous and the blessings of God. But unless you're experiencing it yourself, you're missing out. You're missing out. The only thing you need to know, the only thing I need to know, is Jesus in it? Is Jesus in it? And if He is, then you need to take that step toward Him. And I promise you that Jesus is in you and I moving toward Him. Always. Leaving that life of confusion, alarm, and fear, and anxiety. We are in a day of fierce storm. But that voice of Jesus breaks through the storm saying, "It is I. Come. It is I. Come." Whatever boat you're in, when you hear those words, "It is I. Come," step out. Step out. "Well, I need to see what the others are doing." No, you don't. "Well, I don't want to leave them." Where you're going is better. You're moving toward Christ. The winds are blowing. The waves are crashing with great force. But there is Jesus saying, "It is I." Hear Him again and again. "It is I. It is I. It is I." In light of that, be of good cheer. Be not afraid. Come. Come. Many do not come because they're afraid. They're afraid in the boat, too. They're afraid to step out of the boat. But all you need to hear is, "It is I. Come. It is I. Come." Step out and walk on this storm. Big difference between toiling and rowing in this storm than walking on the water unto Jesus. Where are we? Where are we today? Are we toiling and rowing? Or are we walking on the water, the storm-tossed water, unto Jesus? Can you hear Him? "It is I. It is I. Come." If you're here and unsaved, you as a lost sinner need to hear Jesus saying, "It is I. It is I. The one who left heaven to come to earth to save your soul. The one who worked out a righteousness for you. The one who paid your sin debt. It is I. Come. And trust Him." And either way, saved or unsaved, it's a call to trust Him. Come. God help us to live where Peter was living at this moment, walking on the water. You say, "Well, he sank." Yeah, we'll get to that tonight. But it didn't end there either. That's not where the story ended. Brother Larry, if you come and lead us verse song. Let's all stand, but Larry will lead us in singing. 100.